from Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. Hedda Hopper, who daily reports to 30 million readers in America and 8 foreign countries, now reports to you on the air. Here is Hedda Hopper's Hollywood, from the desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine.
Hello, everybody. Again, I'm going to let you look over my shoulder while I write my column. You'll get fresh news of interesting and famous people from Hollywood and elsewhere. And we'll visit with William Holden, Dan Duryea, folk singer Josh White, and Sir Miles Thomas, one of the world's great leaders in aviation. Okay, let's go. President Truman gave himself and friends a small jam session in San Francisco in the afternoon before he made his speech. He took over the piano from Jimmy McHugh, played his favorite Missouri Waltz, with Helen Cahagan Douglas leading the applause. Tallulah Bankhead booked herself a lecture tour of Eastern colleges and universities at $1,000 a night. The students who enrolled in those institutions never expected they'd get that kind of extracurricular activity. Vivian Leigh and Laurence Olivier, both exhausted after finishing two very important pictures, will rest up on a tramp steamer which will take them all the way to England by way of the Panama Canal. They leave here November 12th and expect to be at sea 45 days. Ginger Rogers hits town tomorrow, and her first date is not with with Greg Bowser, but with Norman Krausner, who will discuss a new picture which will reunite Ginger and Fred Astaire. Montgomery Clift lingers on in London after the command performance to do a play. Monty, who's as elusive as an eel, couldn't be located in New York by frantic friends for a very good reason. He was in Havana, Cuba. I happen to know because before he left Hollywood, he got Ernest Hemingway's telephone number from this office. Headlines are filled with international disharmony. But there's a story out of San Francisco this week I feel you should know about. There, at the birthplace of the United Nations, men from 40 different countries got together without fanfare or friction. Heads of 65 of the world's great airlines met so that you and I can fly to 2,000 cities all over the globe without difficulty. So I telephoned the president of the group, Sir Miles Thomas of Great Britain, and here, by transcription, is what he said.
Miss Hopper, it's a real privilege for me to talk to you. Even in London, we hear a very great deal of your doings with great personalities. Well, now, in San Francisco this week, members of an international body known as IATA, International Air Transport Association, have been meeting together to regularize and get into conformity the practices that the major airline operators all over the world are using. And I'd like to say that it's very appropriate indeed that this important meeting of international airline operators should be held in San Francisco, because besides being the Queen of the Pacific, it is this week particularly a focal point of peace moves and the contribution that international airlines can make to peace and prosperity of the world by getting the people of the world to know each other better is indeed something worthwhile.
There it is. I don't understand those technical details about international traffic, but it's thrilling that men from 40 different countries work together in our own beautiful San Francisco. Before Claudette Colbert flew to London for the command performance, she took lessons from Vivian Leigh on how to curtsy to Her Majesty the Queen. Since Lex Barker's divorce became final last week, I expected Arlene Dahl to set a marriage date immediately. But she says, no, we're not thinking of marriage. Lex should enjoy his freedom, and I'm in no hurry to change my name. The day after Greer Garson left her husband and ranch in New Mexico to attend the Sadler's Wells Valley opening here, her prize shorthorn gave birth to a calf. She immediately called it Sadler's Wells. Gypsy Rose Lee, famous stripteaser, is against stripping when it concerns trees. In New York, she's organized a block party to urge the city fathers to protect them. Gyp has already spent $8,000 on tree surgery for those in front of her own home. I'd like to pay tribute to a very fine American, a man who was so interested in the welfare of our nation that he voluntarily went before the House Un-American Activities Committee to clear up some misunderstandings about himself. I've been exploited by people who give allegiance to a foreign power, he said. Lots of us have been drawn by our heartstrings into groups fixed up to look like noble causes. I was played for a sucker. but I've never knowingly supported any organization designed to overthrow our government. However, I have appeared at benefits which I thought were for worthwhile causes, but later learned that they were not. The man that made that statement to the committee was folk singer Josh White. Right now, he's singing here in Hollywood, so a few nights ago, I went to visit him.
Well, Hattie, you know that we book entertainers get hundreds of requests to perform. And when a call seems like a good one...
I know, Josh. That's why I wanted to ask you. After this experience of yours, what's your advice to other people in show business?
Well, I guess it'd be this. Entertainers will always want to help a good cause. But just because some organizations have a fancy label, don't be fooled. Look under that label.
Excuse me. Showtime, Mr. White. You're on.
See you later, Josh. And I'll be listening.
It's the Band of Jericho,
yeah.
Jericho,
yeah.
Jericho,
yeah.
The Band of Jericho, and the rock is coming down. Now good morning, Brother Pilgrim, pray tell me where you're bound. I'm traveling through this wilderness over different kinds of ground. Now my name is the Bold Pilgrim, to Canaan I am bound. I'm traveling through this wilderness over this enchanted ground. That morning, gosh, it's the Battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Gosh, it's the Battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. Now when the lamb ran, the horns began to blow, and the trumpets began to sound. Oh, Joshua commanded the children to shout, the walls came tumbling down. That morning, gosh, the Battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Gosh, the Battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. Now there's no man like Joshua. There's no man like Saul. There's no man like Joshua. At the Battle of Jericho, that morning, just at the Battle of Jericho, 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 just at the Battle of Jericho, and the wall came tumbling down. My dad's an engineer, my brother drives a hack, my sister takes in washing, and the baby holds a jack. And it looks like I'm never gonna see my one dream.
I know, Josh. And when I got back to the office, I wrote it down. If there's one thing that show people should stick on its dressing room mirrors, it's this. Remember Josh White. Bernard Pundsley, one of the original Dead End Kids who became a doctor, is marrying actress Lynn Bosley within the month. Then he joins the Air Force. He's long since forgotten that he ever was a Dead End Kid. When Prince Mike Romanoff breaks ground for his new hash house on Tuesday, Queen Ethel Barrymore will lay the cornerstone. Otis Lee Sr., who has worked in the prop department at Metro for 17 years, raised three children right in the heart of Hollywood, and they all became missionaries. One works in an Alaskan Eskimo village that contains only 30 families. Another, married to a minister, is in Madagascar. And the third is working in a leper colony in the south of France. Who was it said, love makes the world go round? Well, I don't know about that, but it sure makes the movies go round. Boy meets girl. And recently, they've been going round with another batch of those suck the girls and make them love it pictures. In other words, heel meets girl. And somehow he seems to get it, too. I wonder why. This always amazes me. Personally, I've never understood this kind of lovemaking. So why do girls like it on the screen? In real life, if a heel tries to step on a girl, I think she'd be more inclined to bop him one.
Hey, Hedda, if that's so, what am I doing here?
What?
You gonna bop me one?
Why, damn dare you.
I tried to stop him, Miss Hopper, but he came barging right into the office.
That's all right, Patsy. He's just the man I'm waiting for.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been waiting with a hammer. I got your message, only what is this?
I know that on the screen sometimes I play those heels you're complaining about, but...
Of course. Speak of the devil.
No, don't say that. That's just me in the movie. This is me, Dan Duryea, remember?
Enter a friend. But seriously, Dan, I ask you to stop by because I've always thought columnists have an unfair advantage. They have a chance to voice their opinions, but the other fellow can't talk back. That's why you're here.
Oh, for loyal opposition, huh? Only header. On this question.
Dan, it's perfect casting. You're one of Hollywood's leading merchants of menace, aren't you? Mr. King-size heel.
Now, never mind the compliments. Besides, those aren't the only kind of parts I can play. But, Hedda, you are right. People do like to hear both sides of a question. It's a wonderful idea to share your column. And as for this question, well, the producers who make my pictures and a lot of other people tell me that there is another side. They claim that in real life, women do love the guy who treats them rough.
And I disagree.
Only, Hedda, look. Any man's an idiot who stands right up in front of everybody and pretends to be an authority on what women like. Especially when it comes to love. Oh, brother.
Now, don't be bashful, Dan. This is your business. Why, the things I've seen you do in movies, the way you treat those poor girls, why, you're the meanest man this side of Alcatraz.
Okay. Okay. And at the risk of life and limb, I repeat, they seem to like it. Now, look. This whole thing has baffled me a lot more than it has you, the girl liking the bad guy. You see, when I started out on my acting career, I played just an ordinary heel, just a villain. No women.
I remember the nasty son and the little foxes on stage and screen.
Mm-hmm. But then I was in a picture called Woman in the Window, and I got mixed up with a dame in a very rough way, if you remember. Suddenly, my fan mail jumped. Instead of getting 500 or 600 letters a week, I found myself getting 5,000.
From women?
Mostly. But there it was. I couldn't figure it out.
Suddenly, you were a heel with sex appeal.
And these letters said things like this. Don't ever change. We like you this way. Be mean.
Oh, there must be more lonely women in the world.
No. Now, wait a minute. Letters from all kinds of women. Lonely, career women, happily married ones. In fact, a surprising number of them wrote that the reason they liked me in the picture was because I reminded them of their husbands. Can you imagine? What kind of guys did they marry? Well, needless to say, Hedda, I was pretty well floored. Only then some experts started coming up with an explanation. They consulted psychiatrists.
Oh, we need an expert, huh?
Well, according to them, a big medical survey has shown that of all the women in our world, 80% of them definitely want to be dominated by males.
That word. Why is it whenever anybody tells you women want to be dominated, a man always says it?
Do I have to? I have to answer that, Hedda? Hedda, it seems that if a guy is a heel, well, his neglect and everything else about him sort of symbolize the domination women want. So, here I am, playing parts like in Winchester 73, The Underworld Story, which you've seen, and Al Jennings in Oklahoma, which you'll see soon.
And I like you in all those parts. You're a fine actor. But doesn't it occur to the producers this might be a bad influence? Give people wrong ideas? It's hard enough for women to control men in this world without...
No, Hedda, maybe it's a good influence. Now, I won't take the blame for this one either. But they tell me women get a vicarious thrill out of seeing one of their sex manhandled. And as for the men, I repeat, as for the men, maybe they like to see somebody do what they've often wanted to do themselves. So maybe it lets off a little steam. Only what was that crack about women controlling the men in this world?
Did I say that? Dan, in a nutshell, your point is that women don't get as much domination at home as they'd like.
Did I say that? Hedda, I'm not trying to start any revolutions, but you...
No, it's just strictly a civil war. But, you know, I think this whole argument proves my point. If men still spend all their time trying to figure women out, then who's ahead?
Hmm? Hey, you're way off the subject. Oh, I get it. Mother warned me. Never argue with a woman.
Dan, at least we agree that love is here to stay. But it certainly goes round and round. Only your poor wife. She's the one I hate to think of. Imagine living with a man whose whole career is built around the expert's belief that 80% of women want to be dominated.
Hey, Hedda, no, stop it.
But poor Helen, always being told what to do, being ordered about like...
Hedda, that's not nice. You know my wife. You know what she's like.
Of course. She's lovely.
Yes, but also, you know she's the... Well, Helen happens to be a member of that other 20% like you. If I ever quoted those experts of her, she'd
bop you?
You're not fooling.
Good night, Dan.
Before we return to Miss Hopper as she continues with her column, may I take a moment to tell you about some excellent entertainment features on NBC tomorrow. Theater Guild on the Air will present Ernest Hemingway's Farewell to Arms, starring Joan Fontaine and Humphrey Bogart. Story of adventure and romance told against the beautiful, colorful background of northern Italy. If it's a good western you like, and who doesn't, don't miss Tale of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae. Remember, listen to both of these fine programs on NBC tomorrow.
Spencer Tracy loves kids, but he's mad at a newborn baby playing in his present picture. Her pay is bigger than his. She gets $75 for every 30 seconds she works. Oh, to be a child again. Judy Garland turned down a fortune to sing at New York's Roxy Theater, but after the opening of Call Me Madam, she went to a tiny bistro and sang 50 songs, stayed until 4 a.m., because she liked Lou Hawkins' piano playing. Kirsten Webb won't start another picture until January, so I suggested to his boss that he let him direct one. Daryl Zanuck replied, uh-uh. Once Kirsten gives orders, he'll never take them again. Every once in a while, people, to use a movie phrase, do a delayed take on an actor's performance. Not until weeks after seeing his picture do they realize how fine his work really was. I have a story about just such a case. Yes, and a prediction, too. But before announcing it, I wanted to talk to our most underrated actor about his job in Sunset Boulevard. I refer, of course, to Bill Holden. I tracked him down at the offices of the Screen Actors Guild, where everyone except him had gone home. Hello, Bill. May I come in?
Sit down, Hannah. Sit down.
Bill, you know you're my favorite writer.
Writer? Now, that's a heck of a thing to say to an actor. Didn't you see me in Union Station?
Of course I did. Your latest thrilling melodrama, too. Great suspense. Only in Union Station, you play a detective.
Oh, I get it. My next to latest, I...
Yes, in Sunset Boulevard. When I played Hedda Hopper and you played the only man in history who ever told a story while floating face down in a swimming pool quite dead.
You know, everybody asks me how I could do that. I never tell them.
Seriously, Bill, I want you to know I'm getting more and more phone calls and letters. More and more people are beginning to realize what a wonderful performance you gave in that picture.
Now, wait a minute, Hedda. That was Gloria Swanson's picture. As Norma Desmond, she was terrific.
Of course she is. Her best performance, but you helped make it possible. More than you realize. It was the way you played that poor young man who got caught in the web of the neurotic glamour star. The poor, tragic has-been dreaming of a comeback.
Well, I tried to make the guy believable. You know, he was kind of mixed up himself.
He certainly was. And there was that other tragic love affair that ran through the picture. You and that nice young girl at the studio. Betty wanted to be a writer, too. The part Nancy Olson played.
Oh, sure. I remember.
A complete little love story in itself. A sad little story that could be told all by itself.
It started happy.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, it started happy. Lots of kidding. Only Betty was engaged to Artie Green, the nicest guy that ever lived. And me, I was already hopelessly mixed up with Norma Desmond. And so the few times I saw Betty, I tried to be impersonal without much success. One night we were out walking.
Why are you looking at me like that?
May I say that you smell real special?
Must be my new shampoo.
No, that's no shampoo. How old are you anyway?
22.
22. Smart girl, never stop being 22. And may I suggest that if we're ever going to finish this screenplay we're supposed to be writing, that you keep at least 2 feet away from me. And the first time you see me coming any closer, I want you to take off a shoe and punk me over the head with it. Now, come on now, let's get back to the typewriter. Ready? Hey, Betty. What is it? What's the matter?
I got a telegram from Artie.
Artie? All right. You're going to marry him. That's what you always wanted.
I don't want it now.
Why not? Don't you love Artie?
Of course I love him. I always will. I'm just not in love with him anymore.
What happened?
You did.
me. She was a fool, and I loved her. And I've been a heel not to tell her. Maybe I'd never have to. Maybe I could get away with it, away from Norma. Maybe I could wipe the whole nasty mess right out of my life. Yeah, nice dream. But that's not the way it worked. Instead, I knew how it had to work. How I had to make it be. I got Betty to come out to Norma's house.
This is where you live? Who's Norma Desmond?
If you don't remember the face, you must have heard the name. You ever see so much junk? She had the ceiling brought all the way from Portugal.
I didn't come here to see a house. What about Norma Desmond?
I'm trying to tell you. This is a tremendous place. 8 master bedroom. A sunken tub in every bathroom. There's a bowling alley in the cellar. Lonely here, so she got herself a companion. Very simple setup. An older woman who's well-to-do, a younger man who's not doing too well. Can you figure it out yourself?
No.
All right, I'll give you a few more clues.
No, no, I haven't heard any of this. I've never been in this house. Get your things together. Let's get out of here.
All my things? All the 18 suits, all the custom-made shoes, and the 18 dozen shirts, and the cufflinks, and the platinum keychains, and the cigarette cases?
Come on, Joe.
Come on where? Back to a one-room apartment I can't pay for? Back to writing a story that may sell and very possibly will not?
If you love me, Joe.
Look, sweetie, be practical. I've got a good thing here. A long-term contract with no option, and I like it that way. Maybe it's not very admirable, but... Well, you and Artie can be admirable.
Joe, I can't look at you anymore.
Nobody asked you to. All right, baby, this way out. Good luck to you, Betty. You can finish that story of ours on the way to Arizona. When you and Artie get back, if the two of you ever feel like to swim, there's the pool.
Goodbye, Joe.
So long, Betty. I watched her go, and then I went upstairs to pack that one suitcase I came with. Yeah, me, Joe Gillis, I was going to get out of there. And that's what I couldn't tell Betty, because I knew I was no good for her. Norma Desmond threw a scene, of course, threatened to kill herself, but it didn't make any difference. I was getting out. Down the steps, through the hall, across the terrace. Yeah, at least I was still good enough to walk out of that marble mausoleum. But I only got as far as the swimming pool. Norma saw to that.
My prediction about Bill Holden is that when St. Oscar Day rolls round in Hollywood, Bill Holden will be very much in the running for his brilliant performance in Sunset Boulevard. The shot that ended Joe Gillis's unworthy life was a far cry from those fired by our Minutemen at Lexington and by our boys in Korea. These men fought and are fighting for our freedom, a term that has become so loosely used that I think we should take a look at it. What is freedom? Freedom of speech, the press, religion, thought? Is it an inherent right or something that has been gained through long years of effort and can be maintained only by eternal vigilance? Ask the average American. You'll be surprised at the answers you get. Too many take it for granted. Others shrug it off as a cliché, an old-fashioned gimmick of the rabble-rouser, the flag-waver, and worst of all, a large majority confuse it with license. License. A man may say, I'm free, I can do anything I like. But that freedom doesn't give him the right to stab his neighbor in the back. Nor does it give a man the right to stab his country in the back. But that's what our subversive elements are doing daily. Freedom, by its very nature, must be limited by law and self-discipline. Otherwise, like the beautiful queen in Snow White, it will turn into a horrible witch. It's high time we take stock of ourselves. Search your hearts as individuals and ask, how far can I exercise my freedom without hurting my country? Freedom's a two-edged sword. It works both ways. If you have it, the other guy must have it, too. If he loses it, it won't be long until you, too, lose it. Freedom has been gained through years of suffering, wars, and heartaches. is something which every American should prize and fight to the last drop of blood to maintain. But it can't endure alongside selfishness, pettiness, and disregard for the other fellow's rights, even in America. We're now engaged in a crusade to raise funds to spread freedom to the oppressed peoples of all the world. Why not a crusade in our own country to teach our own people the true meaning of this priceless human right? If it's good enough to sell to the rest of the world, it's certainly good enough to preserve, yes, and understand at home.
Next week, NBC will again bring you Hedda Hopper with the sensational new singer Mario Lanza, Colleen Townsend, Kelly Winters to argue with Hedda, and James and Pamela Mason.
Good night, everybody.
And make a date for next Saturday night for Hedda Hopper's Hollywood. From the ringside seat, the desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine. The Hedda Hopper Show is an SMB production directed by Gil Faust with music by Frank Worth. This is Hollywood Wilcox bidding you good night. Thank you.